So we're, what, a week out from Easter now? It's where we traditionally, of course, celebrate about the death and the resurrection of Jesus. So today we're going to take a look at one of the parables that Jesus tells in the last few days of his life. We'll be in Matthew 25, starting about verse 14. This is the parable of the talents, or the parable of bags of coins, depending on how your Bible decides to label it. It's a very interesting piece of teaching right here, because we're amongst the last week, like we said, of Jesus' life before his crucifixion. And there is so much teaching recorded at this particular point, not about what's going to be immediately happening, but what's going to be happening later at Jesus' return and judgment. And so Jesus fills this section with a number of instructions and parables to teach his disciples what they really need to be paying attention to and what they need to be doing. So what we're going to do this morning is we're going to look at one of the parables and we're going to walk through it together. We're going to learn about its context, where it's here in this point in Jesus' life. We're going to look at the story itself, because that's what a parable is. And being a good story, it's going to be full of things like settings and characters and plots, things that are going to help us and help the disciples relate to it and understand the teaching. And through this, what we're going to see is that Jesus relates to us through this parable, understand that his place as a master, as his sovereign and judge, how each of us are responsible for our own decision to accept a life with what he's given us, and such as a servant and a master, and how for the faithful is manifest in a life to Jesus, and in the end is declared as good and faithful. All right, so let's start with context. The first sentence of this parable kind of reminds us we got to pay attention to what the context is. Again, it will be like a man going on a long journey. That's the beginning of this, the way he starts this parable. So where are we? What's going on? Context is important when you're reading the parables, because it'd be trying to explain to somebody what Easter is without talking about Jesus. You know, you're divorcing it from the context. You're going to misunderstand what's going on. Same thing here with this parable. So, historically, we're at the last week of Jesus' life. Starting, if you go back to Matthew 23, he's been in the temple in Jerusalem. He's been teaching. And in particular, he's been teaching one of his last, I guess you would call it, railings against the Pharisees and the leaders of the law, is about how they're being hypocrites, how they're not telling the people about the kingdom of God. And of course, it's right here in front of them. Turn to chapter 24. Jesus leaves the temple with his disciples. And as they're leaving the temple, his disciples are paying attention to the magnificent building and how it's constructed. And they're drawing Jesus' attention to it. But Jesus' mind is elsewhere. Jesus' mind is not on looking at the beauty of the temple. He knows what's coming. He knows what he's going through. He knows what he's trying to teach. He's also thinking about what it means to his disciples, and to all of us, all the world. That's what's on his mind. And he tells his disciples, it's going to all be destroyed. So now look at Matthew 24, the verse 3. If you look there, and then look at chapter 26, the beginning of chapter 26, verse 2, he's gone from the temple. His disciples have this response to Jesus in regards to the temple, and they've gone to the Mount of Olives. There's only 2 days left to the Passover meal, the last Passover meal. And the disciples have a question. It's not about all the other teachings that were going on in the temple, but it's that particular statement he made there at the end. So in 24:3, they come up to him and say, "Tell us, when will this happen? When will be the sign of your coming and the end of the age?" And Jesus answers them. He answers them directly about giving them instructions, and he gives them four parables that help them understand. Jesus very clearly says how the world will end, and that it will come suddenly. How his coming again will become suddenly, and that nobody's going to know the time. How it will be undeniable. You know, there's not going to be any guesswork as to is it Jesus that's come or not, come back. It will be obvious throughout the world. But he doesn't stop there. Starting about verse 36 in chapter 24, we have Jesus takes the disciples' attention and moves it from this external event his return and coming and this undeniable judgment that's happening. And he takes their minds and their visions and says, don't look at just this. Look back at yourself. I want you to look at your own readiness. Verse 42 there in 24. "So, therefore, keep watch, because you do not know what day your Lord will come. But you must also be ready, because the Son of Man will come at an hour when you do not expect." And that's where he begins a set of instructions, moving the disciples' attention not just from this external event of when it's going to happen, but to, are you ready for this to happen? Where are you? This is the context for the parable that we're at. All right. So going on, we've placed the context of where we're at and when he's beginning to tell this story. And so stories, of course, are full of settings, characters, and plots, and so forth. So let's start with the setting, verse 14. Throughout the parables, Jesus uses common terms, common environments, common descriptions that his disciples are going to understand. In this one, let's go back a little bit. So the beginning, I went forward. Again, it'll be like a man going on a long journey. And we find as we read that first verse that it's a master and his servant. This is a theme that they would understand. They would understand automatically in their minds what a master and servant means. And for his audience, there would be this built-in understanding of it. And give me just a moment, because I have gotten off somewhere. All right, I think I'm all back in the place. I jumped ahead because we haven't read the parable yet, and I thought that seemed funny. So I stopped for a second. Let's go ahead and read the parable, and then the rest of this will make better sense. Terry, you can read for us Matthew 25, 14 through 30.
Again, it will be like a man going on a journey who called his servants and entrusted his property to them. To one he gave 5 talents of money, to another 2 talents, and to another 1 talent, each according to his ability. Then he went on his journey. The man who had received the 5 talents went at once and put his money to work and gained 5 more. So also the one with the 2 talents gained 2 more. But the man who had received the 1 talent went off, dug a hole in the ground, and hid his master's money. After a long time, the master of those servants returned and settled accounts with them. The man who had received the 5 talents brought the other 5. "Master," he said, "you entrusted me with 5 talents. See, I have gained 5 more. His master replied, "Well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful with a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Come and share your master's happiness." The man with the 2 talents also came. "Master," he said, "you entrusted me with 2 talents. See, I have gained 2 more. His master replied, "Well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful with a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Come and share your master's happiness." Then the man who had received the 1 talent came. "Master," he said, "I knew that you are a hard man, harvesting where you have not sown and gathering where you have not scattered seed. So I was afraid, and I went out and hid your talents in the ground. See, here is what belongs to you." His master replied, "You wicked, lazy servant. So you knew that I harvest where I have not sown and gather where I have not scattered seed? Well then, you should have put my money on deposit with the bankers so that when I returned, I would have received it back with interest. Take the talent from him and give it to the one who has the 10 talents. For everyone who has will be given more, and he will have an abundance. Whoever does not have, even what he has will be taken from him. And throw that worthless servant outside into the darkness where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth."
All right, now this will make more sense. The setting. We have the master, and we have the servants. And this is a theme that his disciples would understand, his audience would understand. It's a built-in understanding of the master and servant. The disciples, by understanding this story, they already bring to mind for them that there's a sovereignty of the master. And this master has expectation for his servants and what they should be doing for him. And then finally, that this master does have a right of judgment, because of who he is and what the story is telling us. For us, we take it in and we have to interpret it the same way and how it applies to us. It's not, we can't bring conventions of our own, thousands of years or hundreds of years of maybe a master-servant or master-slave and kind of confuse it. We have to put it back in the same context of where they're at this time. All right, so we got our setting. Let's look at our characters. There are 4 specific people, for the most part, called out here. We got 1 master and 3 servants. There's also bankers that are mentioned, but they don't play a big piece in this story. There's also some non-animate characters. There's the wealth, the gold or the talents, depending on how it's written. And then there's the journey itself. What we do know of these characters, what do we know of these characters from the story? Given from the setting, we know that the master is sovereign. He also has wealth. That's represented here by the gold or by the talents. The servants, they're entrusted with the master's wealth. And so each of them hold a portion of that master's wealth. Now the servants, they aren't all the same. If you look at verse 14 and 15, it says that they're given, he's given the wealth according to their abilities. They have different abilities. The master recognizes this. 2 of the servants end up behaving differently than the third. And then, of course, as we heard the story, we read the parable, by consequence of frequency and emphasis, and kind of what's happening. We know that these servants and what happens with this gold is important. But who are these characters? Are they just constructs for the parable to kind of tell a good story? Or is there something more to them? If you remember back in Matthew 13, there's a parable of the sower. And in this parable, Jesus goes on to explain in the Bible what his parable means. And that, you know, the seed is the message of the kingdom, and how the plants grow is the response of the people and of the condition of their hearts. And so it's all linked to something. So we have to ask ourselves too, is Jesus wanting us to link pieces of this parable, of these characters, back to real life? Well, let's see. He doesn't explain this one word for word like he did that, but that's where context helps us. So back earlier, Matthew 24, verse 44, so you must also be ready because the Son of Man will come in an hour when you do not expect him. So we read that, and then continuing on. Who then is the faithful and wise servant whom the master has put in charge of the servants in the household to give them their food at the proper time? It'll be good for that servant whose master finds him doing so when he returns. So we automatically have a link that Jesus has given us in his description of he goes from being ready for the Son of Man return to it would be like, and he places this image of the master, of like himself as the master. And therefore his disciples are the servants. All right. For us, we have to take away that same application. Jesus is our master, and as disciples, we are the servants. All right. Straightforward. Here we go. Keep going. Now, how about the master's wealth? These bags of gold. Are they representing something specific? Is it salvation, grace? Is it God-given talent? Well, let's look at the story and, of course, the context. What we know from the story is that these bags represent a great wealth of the master, for which the master entrusted his servants. And that, you can see that in verse 14. But if you look down at 20, 22, and 25, the servants all recognize that this is of great importance. This wealth that they've been given is of great importance. And of course, the master recognizes the differences in his servants. And so he gives them, entrusts them with this wealth according to their abilities. All right, so let's bring it back to us. For us, Jesus has entrusted us with great wealth. And there's an expectation, because we're his servants, for what we're going to live with that, you know, living through Jesus with that. All right, there's more to go. The plot. This is where all the action takes place in this story. We've laid out the scene. We have the master. He's gone on a nice long journey, but he's entrusted his servants with this great wealth. And let's see. The master's given him great wealth, but there's something that goes on with these servants. Two of the servants are recognized as good and faithful. But this third servant is recognized as wicked and lazy. This is a huge contrast. You know, it wasn't just, oh, you're a little bit different. No, this is like night and day difference that's being pointed out here. So what is the difference? What is the story trying to bring us to look at? It's trying to have us look at this difference, isn't it? All right. So let's take a look at these servants. The first two servants, they go off to work. They do something. But the last servant, he doesn't do anything with the entrusted wealth. In fact, he actually goes and hides it. It's like this last servant just didn't want to recognize or rejected the wealth of the master. And of course, we know the master is going to go on the journey, and when he returns, he calls the servants to account. So for us, placing ourselves in the story, we see an application of judgment that's occurring for ourselves at Jesus' return. And so we have a question that comes to mind as we hear this parable, as the disciples hear this parable. You know, which servant are we? All right, and that takes us to why Jesus is saying this. He's doing it to teach. It's not a scare tactic. It's not a, hey, I'm having a bad day because I know what's coming, so I'm going to give the disciples a bad day. No, he's fully teaching them, and he's preparing them. He wants them to be ready for when this comes. So what's being taught? What comes to mind? What are they hearing? What are they going through? So the parable is focusing on whose action. It's focusing on particularly that third servant's action. There's a primary teaching around what happened here and what's going on. So what's the difference with this third servant? Well, we know this servant has one bag of gold. So is the servant destined to fail because he only has one compared to the others? That doesn't seem to make sense. That doesn't seem to fit the context, the story. It doesn't even seem to fit the master and servant, right? I mean, the poor guy who got the most had the most return. So why should one be a problem? So it doesn't seem to have to do with the differing amounts. We also know that for the other two servants, regardless of what they ended up returning back to the master with the wealth, what they ended up doing with it took the wealth and they went to work with it, the master replies to them the same. So look at verse 21 and verse 23. The master replies to the good servants, "Well done, good and faithful servant. You've been faithful with a few things. I'll put you in charge of many things. Come and share your master's happiness. What it doesn't say is, oh, you only returned four bags and not 10 like this other guy? No, it didn't say that. It said, well done. You'll come and join in the master's happiness. All right. And then if we look at verse 27, we find out the master even says he didn't expect for this third servant to even double his return. That's where the bankers come in. He said, you can just put his money on interest, gain the interest from the bankers. That's all he needed to do. It wasn't a cumbersome task. It matches the abilities of the people, of the servants. So it was achievable. All right. So what is the difference of this third servant? I think it looks at how this servant responds. In verse 18, what does this servant do when he receives the wealth? He puts it aside. He buries it. And then later, when he's talking with the master, we know that he knew that what was expected of him in verse 24 and 25. But there's almost this declaration that he's like, it's not mine. It's not my wealth. It's not my responsibility. I know what you expected of it, but it's not mine. But that's not being a servant, is it? That's not answering what was expected of him. And so, of course, there's going to be judgment by this master. He's going to say in verse 28 through 30, So take the bag, this is the master, of gold from him and give it to the one who has 10 bags. For whoever has will be given more, and they will have an abundance. And whoever does not have, even what they have will be taken from him. And throw that worthless servant outside into the darkness where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. All right. Besides the immediate context of Jesus in the temple, I wonder if these words also bring back other teachings that Jesus would have been saying. Because back in Matthew 7, there was something very similar. Not everyone who says to me, Lord, Lord, not all who say that to my servants will enter the kingdom of heaven, but only the one who does the will of my Father who is heaven. And just back when he was in there, in one of his other teachings, where he was talking with the Pharisees and the teachers of the law, he also told another parable, also about tenants. And it says in Matthew 21, therefore I tell you that the kingdom of God will be taken away from you and given to people who produce its fruit. And then, of course, when the chief priests heard and the Pharisees heard this, Jesus' parable, they knew they were talking about him. So at the end of it all, regardless of when this comes, because that was the question his disciples had, hey, when is this going to come? When's this end going to happen? Jesus said, he moved it from there to, are you ready for me to come? What's important is what kind of servant Jesus finds on his return. Is it a faithful servant or not? This third servant had been given such great wealth, but did not take action. This third servant did not respond to the good news of the kingdom of heaven. All right, so how does this teaching relate to us? It sounds heavy. It sounds like, oh, we're talking the end to Jesus' return. There is the great joy of the servants that accept, and then there's those who have not listened. So we will have to consider the context here. We see how Jesus relates to this, to the parable to us. We see that we understand that Jesus is our master. That he is the sovereign, he is the judge, that he has given us great wealth, and that it requires of us to answer in response. The good and faithful servants took hold of what was they were given to them, and they lived accordingly as a servant. They lived as servants. This third servant, he didn't live as a servant. He hid it and evidently went off and did something else. What gnaws me a bit about looking at, when you look at parables, is they often push right into your heart through a story. It's hard to get around where they're putting their finger on in that spot. And in this one, it's putting the finger on, hey, there is a response required of us, of each of us, of me, of you, of our friends, of our loved ones. And we know there's people who are going to accept it, like the good and faithful servants. Unfortunately, there's those that are not. But Jesus knows this. That's what's the amazing thing. We are at 2 days, at this point, 2 days from him being crucified. And Jesus is still going to go forward. He's still going to go from that Mount of Olives, go back into Jerusalem. He's going to take on the sins of the world, even those who reject him. And he's going to demonstrate true love. And Jesus didn't limit his life and his wealth only to those servants he knows that are going to respond. He made it available to everyone. How is the graciousness? That's the good news. That's the come, you know, hear this great news. And of course, for us, that should be the fire. That, hey, for those who haven't answered Jesus' call, we want them to hear this. We want them to hear the fact that regardless of where they are in life and at what point in life, Jesus still went to the cross for them. And then he raised from the dead for them. You know, this good news is for them. And of course, if you question that, if you're unsure on that, this is the right place to ask that. You know, come talk to us. We'll help you. We'll help bring understanding. We'll help share the good news and all its fullness to you. And then as you hear it from us who are being faithful, we have a life to live that's full of grace and mercy and love being shown as we learn and bring that into our life as Jesus has showed us that, and that we then go out and do that with others. So that at the end, we can hear Jesus the Master say, "Well done, good and faithful servant. Come and share in your happiness, in my happiness."